Thank you, Kurt Caswell, for joining us on this episode of For the Pages.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to start out with just an umbrella question. Why do you write?
That's a very good question. It's a question that others have asked me, and I've had discussions about this with. I think I write because there's a sort of innate need to do this. I don't really know where it comes from, or this is not a good answer, but it's something I just naturally am compelled to do. So I can remember writing stories around the first grade. So I had a good friend in the first grade. We lived in rural Oregon, and we would sit at a table on the weekends or whatever and write stories side by side. And we had access to his mother's typewriter, and we would write them all out by hand with a pencil, and then we would type them up. Why we did this, I had no idea, and I didn't ask the question why either. So it's just something that has always been present for me as something I do naturally, like, I don't know, brushing my teeth.
So not really a habit, but you're drawn to doing it.
Yeah, I think initially I'm drawn to doing it. It's maybe genetic, it's innate. But at the same time, as I matured as a writer, I realized that having a writing habit is really the only way to get work done. So that one needs to really fashion their life around a writing habit. Otherwise, you always find an excuse to do something else. So both I'm compelled to write, but also I've developed a writing habit over years of practice.
So am I hearing that you write every day?
I go to my writing space every day at the same time, pretty much in the same fashion. And it may not be that while I'm there, I'm generating a new paragraph or a new line or pages, but I'm doing something to move my work forward. So in the case of the most recent book that I wrote, Laika's Window, it included on the front end a great deal of research. I found that, like in the morning when I went to my writing space, I had pushed everything else to the side that I might possibly work on so that I could just focus on the story of Laika. And at the beginning, I could not really write anything because I didn't know anything about her. So I really had to read. And what writing I was doing was really just in the manner of note-taking. But I was also keeping a journal at the time. So I would write in a journal more fluidly and sort of without checking myself or without any direction. And then I'd move to the reading and the note-taking. And that probably went on for a good 2 years before I really started to actually write. So pretty much, yes, I write every day when possible. And sometimes, though, it doesn't really look to me like writing because I'm not writing something that I think I'm going to keep. I'm writing notes that will be in the background supporting what I'm working on.
And when you write, do you write utensil in hand or do you write computer?
So I often draft work with a pencil on a piece of paper, and sometimes I would draft, if it's a shorter piece, I might write the whole piece all the way to the end and then move it to the computer. Because I think in the process, what happens is when I enter it into a Word document, it is a second, it's a revision process, a revision step. And so I really like what happens between what happens by hand and moving that to the computer. That transference is an important step. But I have also just been at the computer and composed from there to the end, and everything's been on the computer. So I go back and forth. I have little, say, periods of time in which I work a lot with a pencil, and then periods of time in which I'm not touching that for a while for whatever reason.
Your fellow writer, Barry Lopez, told me that he sits down and writes on a typewriter.
Mm.
And has no need to move paragraphs around. Do you get that good fortune as well, or do you find that in the process of transferring it from pen and paper to computer that there's some shifting around?
I would say that when I was starting out, I definitely moved paragraphs around a lot because I didn't really understand how to write an essay or definitely not how to write a book, how to put together a long, which is essentially an essay in nonfiction, which is primarily what I do. I played around a lot. I move paragraphs for sure. I move sentences inside of paragraphs. And I think now I do a lot less of that. I sort of grew up on computers, right? So it's not that, I mean, computers were very new when I was writing. I'd already been writing, and computers start developing and becoming more and more sophisticated. And early on, I was able to acquire a Hewlett-Packard laptop, right, that had 3.5-inch floppy drives and no hard drive and a green screen. And I found that a really useful tool. And from there, I just kept moving with the technology. So it was pretty natural for me to work on a computer as opposed to something like a typewriter, where that option to move material around is there.
Is your writing a spiritual practice in some degree, or no?
Yeah, no, I think it's a spiritual practice in many ways. It's not that I feel particularly spiritual when doing it, right? It's more like gardening than it is, you know, worship or being in a church or something, or in a meditative space.
So a participatory practice.
Right. And I find it more visceral and of the body than of the spirit. Although at times there are moments, I think, where you could say I feel moments of elevation where I'm not sure how this happened, and that feels kind of nice and mysterious. But mostly it's just something you sit down and you do. It's like that garden bed needs to be weeded, or those shingles are missing from the roof, you got to go put them back on. And it's pretty physical.
Some people write by logic, some people write by intuition. Do you do either, or do you do both, or does it change up depending upon the rhythm of your need?
I think both. I always come out on those Myers-Briggs personality exams with the science people, with the math people, although I'm not a mathematician by any means, but I always come out with the more linear thinkers. Not that math is linear. Anyway, that's a whole other can of worms. But my point is that I think I'm a fairly linear thinker, and that can be useful, especially in doing research and organizing material and structurally, how do you write an essay or a book? But then when it comes to accessing the reader's heart, right, or speaking to the heart or speaking from the heart, that's another thing. So I kind of like the way in which, for myself anyway, on the surface everything is linear, but underneath there's something else at work. I'm not sure if that answers the question.
No, sort of it melds together in
yeah.
a process that maybe you don't always understand, but it just seems to happen.
Right. So there's my approach is generally literal and linear, but at the same time, there's always something happening that seems to be more intuitive and mysterious.
Okay. I haven't read this book, In the Sun's House, and they found it incredibly revelatory of who you are as a person, because you went to this group of people and you didn't really fit in, and in fact you might have even been ostracized or shunned somewhat.
Yeah.
And it made you really look deep into yourself. How hard is that to do, knowing that hundreds, if not tens of thousands of people are going to know you from the words you wrote, say, in that book?
That was, so at the beginning, when I was starting to write, I was very secretive and private about what I was writing and what I might reveal, and worried about that sort of thing. And I had this experience in high school where I had this, you know, tremendous crush on a girl, and I wrote what I thought was a work of fiction that was about a young guy who falls in love with this girl. So I presented that story to her to sort of impress her, like, I've written this, you know, amazing short story. And she read it and immediately saw through the veneer of what I was doing. The two characters were obviously me and her. So I realized in that moment that I was really writing nonfiction and not fiction. And that when I was trying to conceal something, it was probably obvious it was not really concealed. And there was a couple other experiences where that happened too, with trying to withhold information from a reader in an essay and realizing people who know me would know what I'm talking about anyway, so I'm not hiding anything from them. And people who don't know me really don't care. What they identify is not that it was me, but that this is a human experience. And so they identify with their own humanity, right?
Their own frame of reference.
Exactly, their own frame of reference. And it's irrelevant to them maybe that some stranger has had such and such and reveals so and so. So at some point I decided, you know what, I'm just going to say what's true. And if that's of interest to a reader, then fantastic. And I found that the more honest I was on the page and more revelatory, the more interesting it was to a reader because they could connect with it.
And that's what happened in The Son's House.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you learn about yourself through revealing yourself?
Yeah, because especially when you're writing personal essay or what you might call memoir, while the experience is happening to you, while you're living it, most people are not very analytical about what's unfolding. I mean, they may try to think about it and solve problems or whatever, but you get a little distance on it of time, and looking back as you're writing about the experience, that's when you can become more clear about what was going on for you and how you interacted with people and places. So yeah, you learn with the advantage of that distance, but I think without the writing process, you don't learn.
Yeah.
So you need some medium by which to look back at your past, right, to sort of study it.
Well, it's difficult to live and document what you're living
exactly
at the same time.
Yes.
You almost need that looking back,
right,
to do that.
Right.
Did it surprise you how much you revealed about yourself in that book in particular?
Because
you talked about your successes and your failures.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. I mean, at the time, I mean, now it's not ancient history, but, you know, I don't think about maybe what was revealed there very often anymore. I look at the cover of that book, or if somebody wants one, or I give one away as a gift or something, and I can sort of, you know, come back to it and remember that time and those experiences. But I think at the time when I was writing, there were several moments where I asked myself, should I leave this in or cut this out? And I have to admit that a book like that, because it includes an old relationship and some other sort of private scenes, I guess, it hasn't necessarily been a benefit to me all the time, that it has alarmed a few people here and there. And so when you write honestly, you can, I think, trouble your own relationships even years later.
Because people are seeing you reveal who you are, and they might not always go, I want more of that.
Correct.
They might say, I don't want any of that.
Yeah, exactly. Even if it's years later. So that book came out 10 years ago. Somebody reading it today, for them, it's off. It's especially if it's somebody close to you reading it for the first time, even though those events were more than 10 years ago, almost 20 years ago. For them, reading it on the page, it's present and alive now. And so the person sitting right there who wrote the book is the person in the book, even though to me that was a past self.
Well, right, you're
right?
A different person now.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you could, would you tell your younger writer self anything that you didn't know back then?
Yeah. What I've discovered, I think this is an important part of my development, or my, you know, evolution, development as a writer, that I'm grateful for having worked on, written about my personal experiences, right? So I lived on the Navajo Reservation. That's a very interesting world that a lot of people don't have access to. And I thought, this seems to me a story worth telling. Not because I want to tell about myself so much, but because I think the world that I occupied was valuable as a story. But then I have written personal essay, and those were really good years of training, I think, as a writer, structure, form, sentence, whatever. But now what I have come to understand is that what a reader really wants is a story. And it's the story that is most important, not the person who's writing it. So one of the problems I find, this is maybe a side note to this, one of the problems I think that writing programs have, or let's say their failure, is to teach younger writers how to tell a story and what a story is and how to know if they've got a story or how to find a story that they don't have. So they teach them how to write a sentence, how to write a paragraph, how to write a line, what a poem is, but if you're 22 years old or 25 and you're just out of undergrad school going to a creative writing program, you don't really have many stories to tell compared to what you'll have when you're 45 or 40. And the program teaches you how to write, but not what to write. So I think I would tell my younger self, focus on story, learn what a story is, go out and find a story, right, that's outside of yourself as opposed to writing about the world that you inhabit. Can I add one more thing to that?
Sure, please.
This is not to disparage writing programs so much, but I'm saying that a lot of the focus is now on the writer, who the writer is, what a writer is, how to be a writer, as opposed to what the writer is writing. And the focus should be, in my mind, on the reader, not the writer.
Interesting.
So the writer, it doesn't really matter who wrote the book, whatever book it is. It matters to the reader that they have the story. And here's one little story, if I can tell this.
Sure.
This is a story I heard from Marie Sendak, who wrote many children's books, right? And wrote Where the Wild Things Are. So Marie Sendak was at a reading presenting in front of all these children and their parents. And he tells the story of a young boy coming up with his copy of Where the Wild Things Are and presenting it to him to have him sign it. And the parents are, of course, forcing the boy to do this. But the boy does not know what this person is doing here and why he has to give his favorite book to this man at a table. And this man has got a pen and he keeps writing in everybody's book. And so the boy, it's the book that's important to him. It's removed from the personality of the writer who wrote the book. So the boy hands the book over to Marie Sendak because his parents are forcing him to do it. And he looks at Marie Sendak in the eye and he says, "Don't crap up my book." So that tells me, right, that for the reader, it's the story that's important. It's their story. It's not the writer's story. It's not the writer's book.
I see what you're saying. The other night, David Sedaris was here.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go?
Yes.
One thing I found really interesting about what he said, and I want to get your take on this, is, you know, like, the world is grand, and there are big stories out there. But what I heard him say was, take a small slice of a day,
yeah,
or a week, or even a year, and write about that and expand it rather than trying to take, you know, an arm's breadth worth of a world,
yeah,
and try and describe it. Would you agree with that? To encourage writers to not go too big with what they're writing about, but to pick a narrow, not necessarily a niche thing, but
right,
a narrow channel.
Yeah, so I'm teaching a class right now in which basically that's what we're doing. And the focus is really on shorter, this is a nonfiction workshop, and very short essays with a very specific topic. So, for example, and everybody in the class had to choose a topic. I forced them to choose a topic and to stay on topic. So everything they write is on that topic. So a couple of examples are, somebody's writing about ballroom dancing. Somebody's writing about jewelry. Somebody's writing about dogs. Somebody's writing about the night sky. So each of the pieces they write are focused on this topic. And I think, especially when you're younger, you're sort of mesmerized or romanced by the big, bold books that you may have read that have these sort of sweeping, you know, like something like 100 Years of Solitude or War
Grapes
and Peace
Wrath.
Or Grapes of Wrath, right, where you have to work with a very heady kind of topic. War, death, those sorts of topics. And yeah, you can write about the everyday. And I think these were David Sedaris's words, where he said, it's not what you write, but how you write about it, right? And that doesn't contradict my statement about it's about the story, not the writer, or about the reader, not the writer. It just says that you can, the essayist especially has a love for the miniature. And through something small, right, you can go pretty much anywhere.
Good. Nature's been a big part of your life. You were born in Wyoming? Is that
no.
right? Oregon.
Alaska.
Alaska. Grew up in Oregon.
Grew up in Oregon.
Did nature sort of spur your spirit to want to share? I mean, because, you know, a lot of times you go camping and stuff like that.
Right.
And if you go by yourself, yeah, you're going to have a good time. But when you're with somebody, you have somebody to share it with.
Yeah.
So, being that your love of nature is, to me, obvious, is that something that spurs you, is your love of nature, to write about that or imbue your writing with some of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in rural Oregon. My dad worked for the Forest Service. And when he was younger, we lived in more remote parts of Oregon, right? So we would be up in the Cascade Mountains on a small government compound with a dozen houses, all of which were occupied by Forest Service families. So it was like a little community there, right? I mean, there's nothing else around it. There's no town or stores, or it's just the Cascades Mountains and this collection of families. So I was always outside. It was the kind of place too where parents could let their kids roam safely. The only danger was, each other, maybe. So I had a very free outdoor kind of childhood. And we also moved quite a bit. So we were going always to a new place. In those new places where you don't have your support structure of friends and all of that, I might have a friend for 2 years and then we move, and then a friend for 2 years and then we move. So, or 3 years. So I was always feeling kind of like I had to get along by myself. Being alone was okay to me. And I quite liked it, actually. So the two things come together. I think I had the training to spend a lot of time alone and a necessity, and then I must be somehow geared for that as well. So I think part of that early childhood in nature, the alone time, meant that I was looking for a way to sort of speak to who, I don't know, but that writing became a way to voice something to myself.
But nature is a voice that is so potent
Yeah.
that I'm wondering whether nature has helped mature your voice as you've gotten older.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I'm not sure if I can speak to that. I mean, there's obviously, speak to that articulately. There's obviously experiences in nature that I felt, as you might have said, buoyed by, or I felt were some sort of elevated experience where I had a hand on or a handle on what it means to be alive or what it means to live well. And it had to do with interacting with not other people, but with a place without people and maybe other animals. And to somehow recreate that in my mind or on the page was an important part of understanding it.
Well, yeah, I hesitate to use the word inspiration,
Yeah.
but the word inspiration is to breathe in spirit.
Yeah.
And do you feel like nature helps contribute to you sharing your spirit through your writing?
Yeah, absolutely. That I probably feel most at home when I am alone in nature, I would say. But there's also not a sense that I'm alone, but there's a better, maybe a more generous and understanding presence there in nature.
There's a communion.
Yeah, exactly. There's a communion there.
Is there something that you've never been asked about your writing that you wish you had? And would you answer that for me, please?
I wish I had a really good response to that. There is no, like, I don't have a desire to talk about it necessarily. In the sense that I wish somebody would ask me this so I could talk about it. I've never really thought of that before. So I feel like writing is a very private endeavor, and if, as a young writer, you're not interested in the daily practice and the sort of private aspect of writing,
The
then
struggles.
the struggles, which are, I don't mean it's heroic in some way, like, the man alone against the blank page or whatever, or writer alone. But I do mean that what writing really is you working with the blank page through memory and experience, and you're accessing a part of yourself that you can't really access maybe in any other way, or especially in the company of people. And if you're not interested in that, and you're interested in a persona or the character of the writer or the idea of the writer, you're probably not going to make it. So maybe that's a question. It's not a question, it's an answer, which is that for me, it's a private endeavor that I don't really want to share with people until I get to this point at which I'm thinking, okay, this is really, I have to check in with both of the experiences of it's a private endeavor, but it's for a reader.
Okay.
Did I contradict myself?
I don't think you did. But thank you very much for your time. I
Thank
really
you.
appreciate it.
Thank you.